Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome everybody to another edition of CMC Radio. I'm your host Rob May. Hope everybody's having a good Friday so far. Getting ready for this big weekend, the weekend before Thanksgiving, but at least the next week we can all look forward to a shortened week, hopefully for everybody's sake. As I mentioned, you know, it's Friday at 6 o'clock, and we're doing things a little differently tonight. We have Neil Golden back on the show. He's generally on the Thursday slot at 4 p.m. or 3 p.m. we've been doing Eastern time, but Neil was good enough and kind enough to help a guy out and reschedule for tonight. Neil, how you doing?
I'm doing very well, Rob. It's good to hear your voice again.
Well, as usual, it's great to have you on the show. You know, we've been doing a pretty extensive series with Neil and discussing a lot of different things. Obviously, for everybody that's been listening to the show for Neil's series, you know, they would know that he's a stock chart reader. You know, has been doing this for quite some time, and you know, he's definitely somebody that you can listen to. You know, take his advice, hear it. Don't, you know? And one of the main things that I'll say right off the bat is, you know, I'm not going to go to a financial advisor for tips. but Neil, why don't you take us into your day as a stock chart reader? Tell us what it is, and you know, refresh some of the new audience that we might have right now.
Oh, okay. What I do is usually I look at a stock, and I look at the way it has been moving over a short period of time. Usually, I like to cut the year up into 3 months, so there's four quarters in a year, but usually I'll look at it on a quarterly basis. And depending on how the stock is moving and how it moves through this period of time, or say the last 3 months, I'll try to make predictions on how it's going to move in the future. I think in a previous program, I did talk a little bit about the different time frames there are, and like there's intraday, there's the daily price movements of stock, and then there's the weekly and the monthly. But the reason why I flipped through all these different time frames is trying to find out who is in control of the stock, whether it's let's say the bulls or the bears. If the bulls would be in charge of the stock if the price is moving up, and the bears would be in charge if the stock has been moving down, you know, over a certain period of time. And at this point, I think I should throw out my usual disclaimer, and that is people should never invest with money they can't afford to lose. Investing in stocks, it's an art. It is not a science. Just because something has happened in the past, there's no guarantee that it will happen in the future. And you should always remember that when you're buying something, you're also buying risk at the same time. So buyer beware. And try to know what you're doing before you do it.
Buyer beware. And, I mean, really, like you just said, try to know what you're doing. For a guy like you, you know, and I've asked this question, and I want to reiterate it, you know, this is not something that people can just jump into, right? I mean, they got to do their homework. You can't just throw money around. You know, you might wake up one morning and it's all gone, even if you win a little bit here and there. You know, it's just gone.
Well, yeah, that's why I would recommend no one, especially if they're starting out, you know, use margin, borrow from your broker, or with money, like I said, only use money you can afford to lose, because it is very risky in that sense. So it's a caution, and it takes a period of time, because, you know, even though people may listen to me, they may think it's very, very easy, but I have a tendency to oversimplify things.
Okay.
In the sense that, and that's how I got started, because I thought it was very, very simple, when there's much more to it than, as they say, meets the eye on first glance.
That's fantastic. You know, it's funny to me, Neil, you know, because like you said, like there's a lot of things that people, I guess if you hear a positive story, to me, what it sounds like, and it reminds me of, you know, with investing in the stock market, and I don't know if you're familiar with the new fantasy play, you know, for sports that's been on TV now with FanDuel and a couple of other websites like that, where people are basically, you know, it's basically gambling, and you know, they're taking huge, you know, the difference. Obviously, I mean, there's differences, but to me, it's kind of funny because people they hear the story of these guys winning all this money on sports, you know, fantasy sports, and they're throwing money into it, thinking, oh, you know, I can do this, and it's not necessarily the case.
Exactly, and that's why I was shocked to hear that the state of New York are the biggest customers of DraftKings and FanDuel, and for some reason, I guess you have a lot of football players, but they're not only doing this for football, you know, they'll be doing it for basketball and
everything,
and baseball, anything that they can take a bet on, but it's the same thing, you know, like they advertise on TV, you know, go to your local casino or whatever and lose money and enjoy it at the same time when the odds
Crazy,
are
right?
definitely in favor of the house, yeah.
That's funny. And now, Neil, I know that, you know, you personally, and you have a pretty honest outlook, I'll say, about the market and about the economy and, you know, the things that have affected it here and there and what to look out for, what to stay away from. And, you know, we're coming into the holiday season now, and what I want to know is, and I'm sure that there's people out there that want to know, what can they kind of go to as a smart investment right now with Thanksgiving, Christmas, the new year coming up? Are there smart industries, smart investments to make right now?
I only know what they print, you know, and right now, you know, they're printing things like, you know, maybe FedEx because or UPS because they'll be making a lot of deliveries, and these two companies will be hiring a lot of people.
Sure.
But there's only a short window of time, you know, maybe the last week in, what is it, November to the first week of December are these, especially something like FedEx has a prior history of moving really quickly,
mm-hmm.
and in the sense that it usually moves up during this time period. So based on that, which they compile these statistics for, let's say, 10 years, that this will happen. But on the other hand, the day after or the Friday after Thanksgiving is supposed to be Black Friday. Where department stores show a profit for the year or they break even from the red to the black.
Right.
They're not so sure if people are willing to spend the money, even though they may have the money, you know, and their credit cards may be somewhat lower, you know, and the price of gasoline is around $2.50 a gallon, they may not do it. The only thing they're expecting is that people will be traveling during, you know, the Thanksgiving holiday. So, you know, airlines are expected to be making a lot of money. So the more people travel, the more likely they are to spend money. That's all I can say. But whether or not this is going to be a joyous Christmas for department stores, I do not know.
Right. No, sure,
I'll let
the
market tell me.
There you go. See, you speak through the market. You listen to the market. That's how you live. Now, the topic that I know that you wanted to focus on for today, Neil, and again, you know, like I said, the beauty of having you on the show is that we don't just necessarily talk about the one, you know, just stock chart reading. I mean, obviously, we've discussed it over and over again, and, you know, there's so many different avenues and facets behind it, but you have a lot of different input into a lot of different things, and I think that's what makes this really enjoyable to have you on the show for this extended series. So for today, you wanted to focus on channels. Now, again, I'm going to ask you, because I only know the TV channel, what channel are you discussing?
Well, on a chart, a channel is basically a trading range. As before, a couple of other episodes or weeks ago, I was talking about trading ranges and things along that nature. Well, a channel is basically a trading range. It has a high point and it has a low point. And as I said before, a range is usually the high of the day minus the low of the day. And you
right.
get the range that it went through. And that's the same for a channel. What I like to do is I like to look at maybe a daily chart. And I look for these various, quote, what I'm calling ranges. But I only use my or draw my lines on it horizontally. There will be a top
okay.
line, which I will call resistance. And let's say a stock is selling for, let's say, $410. Well, let's say before it was at $420 and it's come down to $410. So the top line would be called resistance. I'll draw a horizontal line at the top, you know, at 420, and that would be resistance. And I'll draw another line at another point where there seemed to be a lot of volume and activity, and let's say that was at the price of 400.
Okay.
And that would be called support. And right now, like I said, the stock is at 410, so that's where it's going at the moment. One of the first things you learn in becoming a stock chart reader is you're going to be introduced to these things called channels. And when I was first introduced to them, I didn't know their importance, you know, in the sense that I just didn't discover until much later that within these channels, that's where, you know, trend lines occur, that's where
right.
flags and pendants occur, that's where, you know, zigzags occur, and it's all based around the concept of high and low. So when it comes to reading how these things all mish or mash, you know, together,
right.
It can be sort of difficult. But, you know, as a concept, this is one of the basic ones. You really have to master it if you're ever going to be good at it. And I have a confession right here. I didn't really get good at it because no one I had ever talked to told me that I should be looking for channels within the channel, which really occurs. And what it really means when a stock starts moving sideways as far as supply and demand goes. So it took me a long time to incorporate these concepts, especially the one of supply and demand, into the concept of a channel and how it works and what it means.
But now you said a channel within a channel. So, I mean, you know, for the layman's, I mean, what do you look for? What does that really entail?
Well, usually, if a stock is trading in this trading range, what I said was from $400 to $420. Usually what it'll do is, like, it'll go up to 400, and let's say it goes up to $420, and it hits that mark. And at that point, a lot of investors out there that will start shorting the stock, you know, because there's not enough buyers out there that want the stock in order to push it
right.
higher than the $420 mark. So they start shorting the stock, and the stock starts going back down to 400. And when it hits, let's say, 400 again, or because it previous was there again, people will start buying it because they think it's a good buy, and they want to push it back up. So at these points, because there's so much volume that's indicated or takes place at these two trading extremes, to push it in the opposite direction. At these points, they were saying that this is where the number of buyers out there equals the number of sellers. So there's a battle going on between the bulls and the bears to, you know, get control of the stock.
Right. Absolutely.
To more or less answer your question, to the best of my knowledge, if it's at 410 and it's starting to go sideways, let's say, for a few days, that means that at this particular point, again, because it's moving sideways, the number of sellers out there is equal to the number of buyers. And this tents up or sort of accumulates is called sort of like consolidation is taking place. And the winner of this, you know, will push the stock either higher or lower. So I look for things like this, sideways movements within trading ranges, and I just wait for it to break out again in the direction that it goes. And then if it goes above, let's say, the 420, well, at 420 would be the part of the point at which I'd probably jump back in and go long. And but if it didn't do this and it went down to 400 and then all of a sudden it broke below 400, well, then I would probably short it and let the stock go down lower and make money off it that way.
But now, and you mentioned the waiting, but so how long would you typically wait for something like that to happen? I mean, do you have a cutoff time frame where you know it's not going to occur?
No. I mean, basically, you know, stocks move so much a day, you know, on average. Like I said, but sometimes by the trading range of the day, you can tell what's going on. You know, like if a stock is about to exhaust itself. But when the trading range, like I said, is usually smaller than the average daily trading range, then you know, the term they use for that is consolidating, which means that the stock is resting before it starts its movement again. And the concept is more or less you know, you're not chasing the stock in a sense that if your buys or sells are, you know, at the support or resistance level, you know, you're waiting for the price of the stock to come to you and you buy at that point, rather than waking up one morning and the stock jumped 5 points and you jump in and it goes up, then it comes back down. You know, you let the price of the stock come to you because you've already set your orders at what point to buy or sell a particular stock. And this is a much better way of investing than to trade without the trading ranges, or to buy in the way that it's usually taught, in the sense that you wait for a point C. And, you know, this is what everybody knows. If a stock is trending and you bought at C, well, there's probably going to be a lot of people out there, and the market makers, you know, will make sure that they try to wipe that point out. But like I said, to me, this whole concept of trading ranges or channels, you know, it's a very, very important thing. It's very basic. It seems like it's very, very simple, but there's a little bit more complicated than it works. But once you seem to master this this particular introduction or whatever, then it becomes much easier, and it's easier to make money at it. And that's what, like I said, you know, reading books or talking to mentors, they were never really explaining this to me. But the idea of supply and demand, it's there, it's in the market. Now, you know, I guess you've heard the saying before, there's two things that rule the movement of a stock. One is fear and the other one is greed.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also represented at the and the price of a stock at just about all times.
Crazy. So Neil, and for everyone just joining us, we are speaking with Neil Golden, and again, he's a stock chart reader. He's been doing this for so long now. Not to put an age on you, not publicly, but
that's okay.
But the guy knows what he's talking about, and you know, and it's not just you know, making, you know, it's one thing to get lucky in the stock market and feel like you might have a real firm grasp of it, but it's not like that per se. And you know, and as Neil has mentioned over the course of this the series, he had a mentor, and you got to take that into consideration too. This is not something that you can kind of play with. It's you know, it's something where people do lose literally everything. And the topics that Neil has been able to cover have really done a lot, I would say, to really make people get a firm grasp of it, and overall to global economy. And I always kind of pick your brain, Neil, about what you think about current events and situations that have been arising to really, you know, that might affect things. I mean, even with what we were speaking about today, with the holiday season coming up, is the market going to get better? And you bring up travel. Now, a quick thing out of me is, how about what's going on with, you know, with terrorism and everything that just occurred? I mean, obviously that's going to affect travel, but even more so, how does terrorism affect the market, in your opinion?
Well, it affects it in that, you know, like I've been talking ever since I've been on this show about it, everything is global now.
Yeah.
You know, we have the Russians, we have the Chinese, and we have the Europeans. Those are, and then we have South America. So we have, and then we have, you know, United States, and we have Main Street.
Right.
And Washington, D.C., and Wall Street. So between all these various groups, everything now is taken in a global context, in a sense that, because we have especially multinational corporations that make a lot of money overseas, and right now I guess the projection for global growth is pretty low. They're going to try for 2%. You know, China, is their economy is no longer going to be expanding at 8% a year, so it's having problems with, you know, unemployment and paying its loans too. So one of the things that I was sort of I'll just put it this way. What happened in Paris, it happened on a date of it was 11/13/15. That happened on a Friday. The market had been going down basically all week. And then it happened on a Friday, and the market closed in a downward position. And there was a lot of money out there. So starting on the following Monday, the market has been going up ever since. This gives the hedge funds, the mutual funds, and pension funds, and everybody else in America a chance to make some money.
Right.
But one of the statements that came out is that, you know, about France, it will recover, or Paris will recover.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that France is our oldest ally,
right,
of the United States. And mm-hmm. this automatically made me think of Benjamin Franklin, what he did for this country. Benjamin Franklin, he was born in like 1706, and it was during the American Revolution, slightly before 1776, that he was sent to Paris as an ambassador. So if he was born in 1706, you know, he was quite an old man at that time. And I believe if we hadn't have sent him, you know, America would not have been here today, because what he did, he was very astute in the sense that the politicians, basically with a delegation that we had sent to Paris, they weren't going to give America any aid in fighting the English, or the Redcoats, as they were called. But
right.
Because we sent Benjamin Franklin, he was able to charm the wives of the politicians. And because he was there and he did this, America got, you know, aid in the sense of they needed ammunition and arms and that kind of stuff. And when he brought that back to America, you know, George Washington was eventually able to win the revolution. You know, he was very much in favor of the colonies.
Right.
And matter of fact, they said on some other previous trips to England, because his family was basically from England, he was able to spy on the British Parliament and mm-hmm. find out, you know, what they were doing and what they were saying. But in that sense, England did not want to give up the colonies because, as you know, they were taxing us.
Right.
Without representation and getting money from us, and they wanted to continue to do that. And then there was the second event that Paris or France became our friend, and that was during the Civil War. What the listeners may not be aware of, but, you know, as you know, cotton was mainly growing in the southern states, and they wanted to expand the states that were growing cotton, but their main customer was the English. So in a sense, since the South was selling the cotton to the English, and then during the summer, the South, you know, the people who owned the large plantations would go to England and spend all their money instead of keeping it at home and buy English, you know, clothing and furniture and other kinds of things like that. So it's only human nature that England during the Civil War was basically supporting the South, whereas France was basically supporting the North. So it was during this time period that Lincoln, because he knew that the Southerners or Confederates were in England trying to raise money, he didn't want to free the slaves, but he did.
Right.
Although he had no control over them, which was, to me, a very astute political maneuver. But in that sense, Abraham Lincoln or whatever, the North won, and the Civil War was over, and then they sent the statute of, I now refer to it as the Statue of Liberté, Equality, yeah. and Fraternity, to New York City. And there's quite a story behind that, too. But I just wanted to acknowledge, you know, basically what Ben Franklin had done for America as an older man. You know, he was quite useful and very astute and very polished and quite an inventor, you know, writer, and among other things. You know, to him, he invented the Franklin stove, he invented eyeglass glasses, and he discovered lightning. But he's a very important, like I said, American to me. And if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't be here today.
All right. Well, Neil, unfortunately, we are running out of time for tonight's episode. I do want to thank you, of course, for coming back on the show. We have, as of right now, we have two more shows left, I believe, in the extended series that we're doing with you right now. But, again, I love having you on the show, and I think, you know, we always learn a lot from Mr. Neil Golden. So thank you for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. It's nice always to hear your voice, and I wish everyone the start of a very happy holiday.
There you go. Well, same to you, Neil, and we'll talk to you. So from everybody here at CMC Radio, this is Rob May saying we'll see you soon. Take care, everybody.